Welcome to episode 18. We've made a full round here on the Golf Talk Podcast. This is Eric Borzeski. Joining me as always, almost always anyway, Jeff Smith from Washington.
Hello, Eric.
And Everard Okemi from Arizona.
Okay, Eric.
Did you notice we didn't make any fun of you there?
Wow.
For living in Arizona.
I just figure it's going to happen later. Well, we'll just save it.
It won't happen soon because, see, it's going to be 45 and then 50 and then 60 and then, you know, I'll be playing golf soon.
You only get mocked in the winter.
That's right.
So when he's starting to be in a better mood then, okay.
That's right. You only get mocked in the winter when I can't play golf.
Okay.
Yeah, nice.
Someone who's not feeling so good right now, besides Davis Love, who's like 100 over in the Players' Championship, is Greg Owen. Greg Owen had a chance to win the Bay Hill Invitational, Arnold Palmer's tournament, but three-putted from 3 feet 4 inches. Missed the first putt, immediately walked around to the next putt, which was about 2 feet, maybe a foot and a half, hit it, missed it within 7 seconds, and then tapped in, you know, did a horseshoe, tapped that in. He would have had, if he had made the first putt, he would have had a two-shot lead going into the 18th hole. If he had made the second putt, not taken 7 seconds to miss it, he would have had a one-shot lead. As it turns out, he was tied going to the 18th. What the heck?
Yeah, I saw a piece on this on the Golf Channel shortly after it happened, and there was a sports psychologist on, and they showed maybe three or four clips of guys in pressure situations, and they always miss to the right, which is what he did twice. And he didn't go through his routine after he missed the first putt, which was a big choke, in my opinion.
Yeah, I feel sorry for the guy, but at least it's nice to see that I'm not the only one doing it sometimes.
Yes,
do you just walk around? Do you just walk around the hole and hit it?
Sometimes I don't even walk around the hole.
I mean, it was like 2 feet, foot and a half. Tiger Woods, you know, occasionally I see him step up to some putts that are, you know, a sizable length and just wrap them in. You know, I've never seen him miss one, and he certainly doesn't do that when he's in contention, let alone in the lead with one hole to go.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, have you seen a bigger choke?
See, I don't know. Well,
I call it a choke because it's, you know, it was a mental thing. Bad swings happen. You miss putts. You can't say those are choke, but the choke to me is almost purely mental.
Yeah, poor execution or
it
poor.
It manifests itself physically, but had he made that second putt, I still would have called it a choke, just not thinking, basically.
Yeah, I don't know if I wouldn't call that second putt a choke. I think, as I said, the most important thing I think for him was to go through his pre-shot routine.
Well, his brain locked up. See, that to me is a choke.
That's well, you know, that very well could have been it, you know, but that definitely prevented him, I think, from just knocking that short one in.
I still think Vandeveld's got the top one there.
Vandeveld, also a brain cramp there, yes, that would probably take the cake, but that's what I'm saying, you know, he didn't necessarily execute poorly, although that usually happens, more of a mental lockup, just playing like an idiot, basically.
Well, this was, and you have to remember, this was the Bay Hill and not a major, so there has to be some examples, which I can't think of now, of somebody choking in a major championship, and that would definitely be a bigger stage and a bigger choke.
Right.
Well, because if you look at John Daly missing that putt, kind of same thing, I mean, he kind of walked up to it thinking no big deal, tries to tap it in, and he misses it.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, it was Olafable earlier this year, wasn't it, who choked against Woods.
Woods had a couple chokes this year. I mean, Ernie Els didn't exactly play the best in his playoff against Woods either. So, yeah. You know, John Daly last year at the WGC event out at Hardin Park. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
Well,
it's just, he had a chance to win. I mean, I'll give him credit for stepping up and answering questions right after. He said, this is what I'm going to be known for now. He realized that right away, but he said he basically wasn't even thinking of it. He didn't even remember what happened there. He couldn't, it wasn't in his memory, he said.
Yeah, so. Well, and Rod Pampling wasn't exactly clutch off the tee with that three wood in his hand either. Yeah. It was at the 16th, 17th hole, something like that.
I think it was back at 13, wasn't it?
Was it way back there? He just sent one far right.
Out of bounds. The only guy that hit it out of bounds, I think, all week. Yeah, I don't know if that's a choke. That's early in the round, and that's, you know, he was hitting like a hybrid or something off the tee. So that might have just been a bad swing.
Sure.
I don't know if you're feeling too much pressure with like a 3 or 4 shot lead that far along in the round. Someone who wasn't playing at Bay Hill, Graham McDowell. We've heard of him before. Not exactly an upper tier player, but you know, in the top 50 kind of player, top 100 for sure. He's 69th right now in the world rankings. Was denied a sponsor's invitation or an exemption into the Bay Hill by Arnold Palmer or whoever decides these things, so that Arnold Palmer's grandson could play in the tournament. And before you start to say, you know, all favoritism or whatever, Arnold Palmer's grandson's name is Sam Saunders. He's 17 or so. He won the club championship on the tournament course by 17 shots. You know, I mean, is there a story here, or did the guy just simply deserve to play there?
Well, if you look at his scorecard for the two rounds that he's done this week, he's parred the 17th both days. He's done well there. but he had a triple bogey on another par 3, so and ends up eating 14 over for his 2 days that tried to make the cut. Yeah, he's probably a phenomenal player, but totally different situation, I would guess.
Okay.
So. I think it's unfortunate that Graham McDowell, you know, wasn't able to play. I mean, it's Arnold's tournament. It's an invitational, and so this kind of thing is bound to happen.
I'm of the opinion that, you know what, if you win your club championship on the same darn course, exemptions are usually given to people who are local fan favorites, you know, to try to boost morale, attendance, things like that. You know, I mean, if Joe Schmo, that's a highly ranked amateur, gets into a PGA Tour event or a nationwide tour event, you know, all his family and stuff and friends and things will attend the tournament. So that, a lot of times they'll use exemptions for things like that. So he fits that bill. He also fits the bill of, you know, hey, why not see how well he does, how well our club champion does on this course? You know, pretty much doesn't matter to me that he's the grandson. That may have helped. Be interesting to see next year if they have a different club champion, if he gets an invite.
Yeah.
We'll see how that goes. Didn't do so well. Shot 14 over in 2 rounds before missing the cut and finishing tied for 116th.
Ouch.
Really, you know, almost lost by 17 shots instead of winning by 17 shots. So, Fred Funk, the defending champion of this week's Players' Championship, has long been a proponent for, I don't know if I'd say a proponent for, but an advocate against maybe distance, but more the fact that he feels that once you reach 115 or 120 miles per hour in swing speed, you get an exponential jump in ball velocity. He had an interview recently, as champions do, and said some interesting things that pretty much clearly outline his view. He's pretty much a straight shooter, so what did you find interesting in this?
Well, you know, obviously he's a short hitter, and he's going to be frustrated that, you know, he's not hitting it as far as the other guys. I mean, you know, it's not what's going to happen. I mean, Fred Funk is turning 50 here, and you got all these young guys. They're naturally going to be hitting the ball further. I mean, if Fred Funk is 30 years old, I'm guessing he'd be averaging 300 yards himself. Obviously, he's a shorter hitter, so he's going to care about it.
Well, what I saw here, he said when he first came out on tour, the long guys were hitting 30 to 35 yards past him. Now it's 70 to 75 yards. So he's basically saying the gap between him and the long hitters has doubled. I don't know that he had people swinging as hard back then. You know, I mean, I don't think his distance hasn't gone up much at all in that time frame. So I don't know in 25 years if you would expect, you know, the longest hitters to not be hitting it further. And, you know, let's not forget that except for a few exceptions here and there, the long hitters typically don't win tournaments. Last year's longest hitter, Scott Henn, doesn't even have status on the nationwide tour.
Here's another way to look at it, too, is, yeah, he's one of the shorter hitters on tour, but he still isn't that short. I mean, everyone talks about, yeah, he doesn't, because he's not bombing it consistently over 300 yards, that he's a short hitter.
He's no pea popper.
No, he still gets it out there, and he's got laser-like accuracy to go with it. And the other thing, too, is, I mean, with the way they measure the longest drives, yeah, of course it's going to favor the longest shot of the biggest guys. So, you know, if you do like more of a true average with the drive, it's probably a little bit closer. I mean, he's still going to be behind a lot of the bigger guys, but it's probably still a little bit closer.
Yeah, his average is around 275 yards, if I remember correctly. So
yeah, and this is also coming from a guy who won the Players' Championship last year, and he's always high on the money list.
Right.
I mean, he continues to compete.
He's had a lot more success than guys that are hitting at 75 yards past him.
This is true.
Okay. Right. We'll be right back after this ad from Titleist and a segment from Golf Gods that they've not yet gotten to us, but I'm hoping that they will. So I don't know what it's about, but hopefully it's in there. So we'll be right back.
To be a great putter, you have to be tension-free.
Trust your line and follow through. For the short wedge shot, set your weight forward and keep it there.
To create spin on a chip, mash the ball into the ground.
I've got to try that.
To hit the bump and run, place the ball back in your stance.
On downhill putts, play more break.
On short putts, focus on a tiny spot in the hole.
Be sure to accelerate.
On long putts, lean the shaft forward out of drift.
When it's this windy, try widening your stance.
And your most important tip, trust your Titleist.
You can learn a lot from the world's best players.
From the studios of GolfGods.com in Minneapolis, this is Chip Shots, a weekly look at golf equipment news brought to you by the staff of GolfGods.com, the official online pro shop of TheSandTrap.com.
This week on Chip Shots, let's make this quick. I don't know about you, but I love a good shoe shine. It's one of life's small luxuries that I give myself each time I hit the airport. In my younger days, I'd cart out the metal box of shoe shine supplies on Sundays and spit shine them myself. A few years later, I still like to get a good airport shine, but in between, with kids, a multitude of jobs, and other priorities, I simply found myself slacking on the weekly shoe care. I recently discovered the Kiwi Express sponge, though. As the company literature says, it's a ridiculously fast, no-buff, no hassle way to shine your shoes. Seriously, with this product, it takes no more than 30 seconds to quickly shine a pair of shoes. The Kiwi Express also has a unique liquid level indicator. This indicator tells you exactly how much shoe shine liquid has been used, so you know when it's time to replace your sponge. All you do for a near-perfect shine is wipe the major debris off your shoes, grab the sponge in one hand, the shoe in the other, and glide the sponge over the leather. Then you're done. There's no buffing and no tip. Ironically, Kiwi has worked pretty hard to get the word out regarding this product, launching an innovative web-based marketing campaign to help make shoe shining relevant again. You can find the links to the whimsical campaign in this week's show notes. Since this is a show dedicated to golf and not grooming, this is a good way to keep your golf shoes protected and looking good, but I would be remiss if I didn't add that it might just help you land that monster job or get the girl due to your impeccable grooming. Well, that's it for this week's Chip Shots. Now back to this week's podcast.
And welcome back. This week's listener forum site topic actually comes to us from an email. You can email us at podcast@thesandtrap.com. And Bin Nguyen writes in to say he's just curious to know whether there have been any thoughts from the governing bodies of golf regarding loud or obnoxious drivers. Recently, I've met someone who has an especially astonishingly loud driver. He must have hit 10 drives, and then I walked down to the other end of the range. Nonetheless, the ringing in my ears must have lasted half an hour after the incident. I'm going to link to a review that we've done on the McGregor MacTech NVG driver, the initial last year's version of the driver that Greg Norman and a few others play. It's especially known for being very loud, and it's a loud noise. You can hear it a couple holes away. Should this be a rule? Should clubs, you know, be a little quieter?
No. If you're ballsy enough to, you know, pick up a McGregor driver and take it out there and, like, have the thunder clap at impact, I think it's fine.
I'm not being paid to say this, but I like McGregor drivers. The iOmatic was actually even louder than the NVG. And as far as Ben is concerned, who cares? I think
his ears are ringing. I mean, it could literally be causing him pain and suffering.
And I don't mean to pick on the guy, but I think that people are sometimes taking the "let's be too quiet on the course" thing a little too far. The only one that I've ever heard that's even louder is Golf Myth has this driver that's 1,000 cc's. They do it as kind of a prank or a demo tool. That one is ridiculously loud. I mean, that granted is, you can hear that pretty much from anywhere. Otherwise, McGregor's are using any of these on the course, big deal.
All right, well, what I think is that there could be a possibility that something may need to be legislated at some point in the future, but I think that we won't get there because market forces will not allow us to reach that point. Basically, you know, if you came out with a driver that was loud and literally hurting people's ears or something, people won't buy it. They'll hit it, they'll go, "Oh my God," and they'll return it. So I think market forces will probably keep this in check. Nonetheless, if we had a driver that came out that sounded like, you know, a siren or just made some really obnoxious or literally painful level of sound, I could see where something may come into play. But
look at the original Ping Putter, the 1A. I mean, that's how he got his name. Ping.
That didn't hurt people's ears,
right? But it was an annoying sound to most.
We're talking about levels, volume here, not tone.
Well, I'd like to hear the McGregor driver. I know Don. You know, last year at the Newport Cup had his Callaway driver, and that was pretty loud. But
that was more of a dull thwack, though.
So yeah,
not like the Ben. I think market forces will take care of it more than the ruling bodies will need to step in. So just, you can always put your friend's driver where the sun don't shine. It probably won't make much noise there. So
you'll get
a different kind of noise. that's my opinion on that. But
in the heat of competition, you should really stick to your go-to shot. For me, that's a tight little draw.
Copy your practice swing and don't think about results.
Just take your time, keep everything nice and slow.
When I'm under pressure, I think about my kids.
I think of my kid too.
Keep it simple. Play one shot at a time.
Don't be tentative, stay real aggressive.
Make sure and drink lots of water.
Concentrate on concentrating.
Don't think too much.
Just remember to breathe.
And don't panic.
And one more tip,
trust your Titleist.
You can learn a lot from the world's best players.
And welcome back. As we've mentioned this week, we have the Players' Championship going on. There's been a lot of talk in golf through the years, pretty much since the Players' Championship came around, whether the Players' Championship was the fifth major or not. You know, do the air quotes around that if you'd like. Is the Players' Championship the fifth major? It's had a good list of winners. It's played on the same course. It attracts a lot of attention.
My take is, first of all, it's a great tournament. A lot of the best players in the world collect here. And, of course, the 17th hole is an awesome hole. It's a great golf course. Very challenging. It's a shorter course, but at the same time, you know, Anyway, no, I don't think it's a fifth major.
Never heard of.
I don't think it is either. Again, it's a great tournament, but not until like, you know, maybe when the PGA Tour redoes its schedule in 2008 or 9 or whatever, and they find that they want to add it as an official major, then fine. Until then, no.
Would you support that move? Because I sure as heck wouldn't. Who gets to decide what's a major? I don't think the PGA Tour can just say, this is a major now. I mean, it's their own tournament. It'd be kind of self-serving to call it that. You do get major-like rewards for winning. You get a five-year exemption on the PGA Tour, if I remember correctly. You get a boatload of money, more than you get in the majors, in fact. Why does it have to be a major? Majors in golf have always been four. Majors in tennis have been four. Champions Tour, we can ignore them, but they have like five or something.
Well, I saw Phil Mickelson talking about answering questions, and his argument was, and I forget what his argument was. That's
well spoken as ever, Phil.
No, he said, what did he say? Crap.
What?
I couldn't say.
Go ahead.
He says, don't the Champions Tour have five majors? He leans over and asks somebody, and they say, yeah, I think so. And then he's like, yeah, well, this is a good idea, you know, because, of course, the Champions Tour does it. You know, I don't think it's a viable option simply because there's too much history. I mean, the four majors, the Grand Slam, Bobby Jones is the only guy to do it in a calendar year. Tiger Woods is the only guy to join him as a Grand Slam winner. You know, I don't think you can move that kind of a rock.
I read an article this week that said the fifth major shouldn't be the fifth major, but they should move the PGA Championship to the TPC of Sawgrass and just call that the thing. You know, I posted a comment on this particular article that said, well, geez, the PGA is not the PGA Tour. They're very different. So, pretty unlikely to happen. You guys are with me on this. The thing is not the fifth major. Ever heard of those?
Yeah.
You want it to be? So, maybe we'll make fun of you for that for the next...
That's okay.
Couple months.
I mean, I agree. Logistically, you're going to be running into problems because what are you going to do with all the players that have already run it? Like Adam Scott, Fred Funk, are you going to retroactively go back and say that they're now major champions? No, you can't do that. So it's almost like it's got to be a brand new tournament.
Well, I don't think it takes anything away from the TPC at Sawgrass and this tournament. I mean...
No, it's a big tournament.
It's great tournament. Does it have to be a major? No. But, I mean, the biggest players can continue coming,
right?
You know, and wanting to win it.
And winning a boatload of money. So.
You bet.
Should the 17th hole be made more difficult? I mean, it's well, here's the point. It's 135 yards. It's a pitching wedge and 9-iron. It's not often terribly windy there. I honestly don't know how so many pros miss the green, you know, 12, 13 per round. I mean, that's 10% of the golfers per round.
Well, if you look at some of the shots, the guys don't have a problem hitting the green. It's a problem of keeping the ball on the green.
Well, it's a big green. You hit it in the middle, it's going to stay on somewhere.
No, well, there was a shot yesterday that they showed on the camera where he hit it, like, almost right at the ridge because the pin was just about in the middle, and the ball rolled all the way back into the French. Couples, they showed his shot.
It didn't go in the water.
No, it didn't.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's a pitching wedge. How, you know, these guys can't hit a green with a pitching wedge. It's not a small green.
Eric, my man. Are you going to go play it, man?
I'm this is my next question. Do you think, how many balls would it take for you to hit the green? Or, if I gave you 10 golf balls and set you up 130 yards away from a green that big, how many would you hit on the green?
How many would I personally hit on the green?
Yeah, Jeff, you can't bump and run it, so don't even think that.
Now, this is, you know, I'm sending it up in orbit and just hoping for the best, basically, here. You know, I mean, can I get 3-4 balls on there? Yeah, probably so.
Okay. I think they psych themselves out or something. I, you know, they have a crowd and all that, so that adds to it.
Well, I also think they're forced to make a different shot. I mean, a lot of these guys are having abbreviated follow-through. They're trying to keep the ball low under the wind and stop it on the green. And so I think it's a legitimately tough hole. No, I personally don't think they need to. I mean, if lost balls is any indication, no, they don't have to make it harder.
It's the only hole that's seen more double bogeys than bogeys. So.
Yes. I think the part of it, though, too, is if you look at it as it's the 17th hole, so it's, you know, one of your great finishing holes, it's not so much the yardage itself, but I think the water just starts to screw with people's minds. Kind of like the Blue Monster does.
Well, and, I don't know. It hasn't affected that many tournament outcomes, though. You know, the better players that are in contention really don't have much of a problem with the hole. You know, we haven't seen too many players in the fourth round near the end of the tournament put it in the water. He wants to make it tougher. He wants to move it back to 160 yards. That'd be a 7-iron, so might be more interesting. Some pros might like that because they wouldn't have to deal with so much spin and sucking the ball off the green. You never know. I don't know.
It's true.
90% green in regulation with a pitching wedge in your hand, though, that doesn't seem to be so great, so... We shall see. Okay, now we got like 400 Tiger Woods stories, but Tiger Woods has agreed to play the HSBC World Match Play Championship the week before the Ryder Cup this year. It's held in England, and the Ryder Cup's in Ireland this year, so it's not like he's going to be traveling a lot. Good move or bad move?
Good move. Play as many as you can.
I don't know. I mean, in his mind, he feels like that's going to get him ready for the Ryder Cup, so, if, you know, more power to him.
That's right. We're not ones to question the best golfer in the world right now. So if he says playing match play the week before, we'll get him in tune. So be it.
Yeah, spending 3 weeks in Europe. I mean, can you really complain too much? Sure.
Can't hurt. So Tiger's dad, Tiger, left the TPC of Sawgrass to fly back to California Wednesday, missing his practice round and an interview to be with his dad, who's been sick quite a while with cancer and stuff. Is Tiger's dad affecting his play? Is this Tiger's dad's health affecting Tiger's play?
I say yeah, because he's a real emotional guy.
Right.
Especially when it comes to his dad.
And they've had such a connection with each other that, yeah, it's definitely affecting him, and he's doing the right thing.
Do you think that, and I don't want to be overly brutal about it, but the end is at some point near here, I'm thinking, for his dad. You know, they haven't said as much or given a time frame, but that's the running guess, you know, sometime. Last year, I heard he might not make it through last year. So, you know, should that happen, Tiger Woods is talking of missing the Masters this year. That's, you know, that's, if nothing else, shows how dedicated he is to his dad and wanting to be by his side. How long of a pass do you give Tiger Woods should that happen, or when that happens on play?
I think you give him a pass as long as he wants. I mean, it's his dad, and as he said, you know, it really shows you, it puts things in perspective. You want to get mad about a golf shot, but it's just a golf shot, in Tiger's words, and I think that, you know, it does put life in perspective. His dad's more important than a tournament, and so I give him some time.
Yeah, again, take as much time as you need. Family comes first.
Okay, next up, the Tavistock Cup. I enjoyed this tremendously last year. Turns out that Ernie Els is moving away from Lake Nona. Tiger Woods bought property in Jupiter and is pretty much moving away from Islesworth. So this could be the last Tavistock Cup for all I know. Tavistock Cup, kind of interesting to see guys kick back a little bit, but they still are competitive golf. Interesting also to see Tiger Woods and, unfortunately, Marco Mira playing in shorts. is this something you look forward to? Or
I like it. It's fun, like you said, it's a fun casual event. It's just fun to see the guys just out there goofing off, almost like a charity event.
And yet they still get prize money.
Yeah, $1.5 million split between.
Do they need that?
Right.
No.
Well, this is some people's criticism of the PGA Tours. It's gotten, you know, so serious, and some want to go back to the days with more joking around on the fairways and stuff, and that appeals to people. And yeah, people are going to like that.
Right. Last year, Ernie Els and Tiger Woods had a playoff. Tiger kept bombing it down there. I remember the announcer going, "Oh my God, that's way right. That's going to have trouble catching land." Turns out Tiger threw it 340 and landed in the middle of the fairway a couple times in the playoffs. So, you know, interesting to see that, almost like the President's Cup playoffs we saw years ago. So I'm a fan, and I'm going to look forward to checking out. Tiger Woods' putter is a Scotty Cameron Newport 2 that he's had for quite a while. He's won $68.8 million with it. They say everyone has a price. Do you think you could get, buy Tiger's putter?
No.
He doesn't need the money.
Right, yeah. You only have a price if you need the money, right? And even if you know, you gave him $1 billion, and maybe he wanted to be a billionaire, I don't know. I think winning is more important to him than any amount of money.
$2 billion, $1 billion, what's the difference?
Right.
And Scotty Cameron has even said that he's made duplicates, like on a yearly basis. He makes 3 or 4 backup putters for Tiger just in case something happens. And still, Tiger will try them all out, and he goes back to that original one.
I just have to wonder, every time I hear that story, if they'll, you know, he didn't, like, switch them around when he wasn't looking. And Tiger goes, "No, I really like this one." He goes, "Ha, ha, ha." You know, that'd be kind of funny to see, but I don't know.
Well, in one of those interviews, like, Tiger's known for being such a, trying to think of a good word to describe him, but just that he knows his equipment inside and out.
Right.
And, you know, they've switched up different sets of irons with him, and he said, no, the top line on this one is a millimeter off or whatever. And they've kind of tested him on it, saying, "Hey, do you really know?"
Right.
To comparison's sake, Lance Armstrong is like that with Cycle. His team has actually done that. Like, they've messed with his seat, and they've messed with the equipment on his bike. And he'll get on it, and, like, 30 seconds down the road, he'll realize, "Hey, someone just screwed with my bike."
Yeah.
For someone like Tiger, I think it's far more than just a money value with that putter.
Could be a skill he learned in telling his wife's twin apart from his wife.
Is that a really bad thing to mix those two up?
Well, it could be, because, you know, it could end in divorce, but yeah. I'm guessing he might have had to learn quickly which one was the right one.
Right.
So maybe, you know, like I said, just a skill he could have, that's a millimeter longer there. Nope, that's not it. Anyway, Tim Fincham is good through 65. He's signed an extension.
$4.5 million
per year.
Yes.
And he's good through the age of 65. He's been the PGA Tour commissioner for 12 years now. If I remember, what is he, 59 now? Something like that.
Yep.
So he says, "I didn't hear any booing." So
that was his comment to getting the extension?
Yes. PGA Tour Board of Directors gave him a 6-year contract extension that takes Fincham to his 65th birthday. And Fincham said at the players-only meeting Tuesday night that he agreed to serve it. He says, "I didn't hear any booing. I'm not sure they jumped up and down, but I didn't hear any booing." So there you go. There were the usual rumors about his compensation, of course. Is $4.5 million an adequate salary for Tim Fincham, head of a nonprofit organization?
Yeah, it's probably going to help him buy some toothpaste every week and that type of thing, yes.
The necessities.
Yeah, the bare bones.
Well, the PGA Tour made $660 million last year, so, you know, I don't know that $4.5 million is... You got to have enough to keep the guy's interests.
Yeah, not bad for nonprofit.
Right, there we go. So long as he's not spending it on hookers, I don't suppose it really matters. I mean, I've seen CEOs make a couple $100 million a year. He makes $4.5 million. So, right. You know, he's really not paid that much. He runs the whole show. Tiger Woods, you know, just wins the most tournaments and makes $10 million. So finally, wrapping up here, we have one quick thing we want to link to. Golf Gods is having a 15% off sale. You have to enter a coupon code when you check out. Pretty much any order, yeah. You type in spring 15, you get 15% off.
Off the top item. Yeah.
So they have, what you do is, you know, you buy one item, and then you buy another item, and then you buy another item, and you just keep entering the code. Well, you do, I mean, if you want, because there's no restrictions against that. But if you're a member of our forum, you can also get a free belt watch. And I posted a picture of that, and we'll link to our forum. So if you're not a member of our forum, join and, like, post something at least, so you have at least one post. Then go to golfgods.com and buy something, enter the code, and you get 15% off and a free watch. So 15% off, you know, it's a good bit of savings on a $400 driver, so.
Yeah, absolutely.
$60, you can, you know, buy a round of golf somewhere.
Plus free shipping on so many items, so.
That's right. So we'll link to that, and you can save a bunch of money, you know, and then sell to your friends at cost. make your money back, so.
Which these guys would do.
That's right. Thanks for listening. This was episode 18. Like, again, we've made a full round here, and we're going to start in a second round next week of the Golf Talk Podcast. Check us out online at thesandtrap.com. Join our forums. There's a link on our homepage for that. And if you'd like to participate in the podcast, we have a link in the forums going on that every week where we update and talk about the time and stuff. So feel free to join us, and you too can make fun of Everardo for living in Arizona.
Hey, that's fine, because I'm going to go play golf right after this.
Thanks for joining us once again. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.